I'm so excited to have a wonderful person here today, Deanna Quietwater Noriega. Hi, Deanna.
Good morning. How are
Oh, I'm
you?
so Well, we had a crazy time of me getting here, but here we are. You were so patient. So I'm so excited because I knew you were a writer. Tell us, you have two books. Do you have more than two or just these two? Because these are
Well,
wonderful.
I did edit a version of the Handbook for Prospective Guide Dog Users for GDUI a few
Oh.
years ago. And I have pieces in three of the anthologies that my writers group puts out. And I've got pieces in various small anthologies all over the place. And you probably have seen some of my writing in the Braille Forum. I've also been published. One of my earliest publications was a children's story I wrote in a National Braille Press magazine, Our Special.
Oh,
It,
wow.
they had a writer's contest years ago when my children were young, and I had recently written a story aimed at one of my daughters as a talking thing, just to bring up a subject about embarrassment of having a mommy who's not quite like all the other mommies, and the worry of this little witch about having her mom show up for the Halloween carnival.
Oh, okay.
So that one is called Different. And you know, so pieces of mine have appeared all over the place in obscure places.
Well, before we do get into talking about your books, I notice how story is such a part of your style of conversation and your way of being in the world. Even now, weaving together your publications and where your articles and different things have been, there's usually a story. Story is very important to you, isn't it?
Well, from early childhood, I lived among storytellers. My family cannot have an ordinary meal together without exchanging a bunch of sometimes exaggerated stories of what happened that day. You know, dramatizations of disasters or funny things or things we observed. A salt shaker turns into a microphone. The knife that someone is cutting up, say a cake I baked as a young girl, my stepfather would bang it on the table, and they would, you know, just insist that it was impossible to cut it, and all of that sort of thing. So we dramatized a lot in my growing up.
That's interesting. I guess I think of you already just from reading and talking with you. You're a teacher, and so I would imagine you've used story a lot to help people gain new understanding. What do you think?
Well, I'm a shy person, which most of my friends don't believe, but it's true. But among friends and people that I care about, it's easy for me to start a conversation by talking if they're going through something, of sharing something that is, you know, to show that I understand where they're coming from and that they're not alone in. When I was in high school, I found a poem that has influenced how I deal with others. And it's an Edna St. Vincent Millay poem called Prayer to Persephone. And I don't have it in front of me, but
That's okay.
basically what it says is that, my dear, it's not so dreadful here. of the fact that if I could show someone that they weren't alone, whether it's with dealing with recent blindness or having a new baby or a disappointment on a job or whatever, that it takes away some of the, a little bit of the pain.
To comfort, to and help someone know that, yeah, they couldn't, they didn't have to give up or give up hope, give some hope.
Yeah, because if I survived it, they can too.
I have been really thinking about a theme of depth that I feel from your writing. But let's talk about your books before I get into some of what I
Going down
want.
the rabbit hole.
Yeah, because I
I'm good at
really.
rabbit holes.
Oh, wow. Okay, which one do you want to talk about first? Because they're
Well,
just both so wonderful.
my first book was because in the midst of COVID, my mother turned 90, and I was heartbroken that I wouldn't be there to help her celebrate. Because at that age, you don't know how much longer you're going to have a mama. And my mom was one of my first supporters, advocates. She was an amazing mom. She was 17 when I was born. I was her first child. And when I was 4 months old, I was diagnosed as having congenital glaucoma. And it was because of her own alertness and observation that she took me to the military doctor for an exam that young, saying that there was something wrong, that I cried every time she would move from shadow to light, and that there must be something hurting me in the light. And so he did the exam, and he told her one of the things that was an early marker for a baby with a congenital glaucoma was exceptionally large, beautiful eyes, because the pressure in the eyes was causing them to be somewhat enlarged. And he told her that I would probably be blind by the time I was 10. But he also gave her some good advice. He said, "Little mama, you have a hard road to walk because this little one needs you to be a good mama. And that means allowing her to be a child."
Oh,
And
excellent.
that your impulse will be to protect her and keep her from all harm. But if you do that, she will never be able to grow up and be who she has the potential to be, because you will teach her to be afraid, and you will teach her that she can't do for herself. And
Wow.
then she'll grow up to adulthood without the tools she needs to carry on after you are gone.
She told
And
you this later on, huh?
yes, she did when we were talking about it when I was in my 20s. So I wanted to make her birthday special. And I thought, well, mama's always liked everything you write. So why not take that book you've been trying to prepare to shop around to university presses, because it's basically done. But the first university press I applied to, I was looking for ones that had vet departments, veterinary schools, and also psychology departments, because I thought my book, first book would be a good sell for them. But the first query letter I sent out, I got such a long list of what they wanted, I was overwhelmed. And so I was in the process of making myself put this together. And so I said, well, I know about a company that will help you prepare your book to be released on Amazon. And it will be your book under your copyright. And then if, you know, if there's an opportunity to get it into a wider market, well, you know, you still have that potential. And so I contacted DLD Books, which is a writer, and his wife, who's also a writer, who went indie because they got so frustrated with the difficulty of getting a standard press. And it takes sometimes a year or even 2 years to get a book, even once it's accepted, published. And so they were helping, and particularly helping with very low cost fees, visually impaired writers to get their books on publication. So this was in November. I sent my draft manuscript to them and said, can we get this published by February 1st so that I can have a copy of it in my mother's hands for her 90th birthday? And Leonora wrote back and said, yes, we can do this. We can get it done by January. I can fit it into what we're doing now. It's not long, and it doesn't need a lot. And so she did the editing, and they're very thorough with their editing. And David does the tech part of loading it up on KDP on Amazon and on Smashwords to get multiple varieties. Of available for the visually
formats.
Impaired,
Oh,
which
okay.
would be the easiest because they'll send it to you in a docs file, a EPUB, whatever you need it to be. I think it's changed since then, but that's what they used to do. They're in the process of joining to a larger print on demand company, so things may be changing. But that's what they were doing then. And so they got my book up by January 6th of 2021 in time for my mother's 90th birthday. And I was able to get a print copy of it mailed to my brother and into my mother's hands by his hand on her birthday.
I bet that meant so much to her.
Yeah. So it was 50 years of walking with friends. And the book cover they designed for me was the photograph of me with my current dog at that time, a beautiful German Shepherd. And there's a story. I am good at rabbit holes. There's a story about the cover.
Okay.
We were having our photograph taken for our ID card. And they had this wonderful platform that went up and down to bring the dog up to the right waist high level.
I remember that platform. Yes.
Yes. And so my lovely German Shepherd was sitting on the platform. I had, as my photograph picture, had taken a Cherokee style dress with a little shawl and mat and blouse on, and I'd worn some Native American jewelry, and I had braided my hair and put these large brass beads onto leather strips and wrapped them around my braids. And Angela, who is services coordinator, was taking the photograph with her high, you know, digital camera. And she was so fascinated by what I was wearing, she kept saying, oh, I love your hair. And I'd say, oh, they're braid mat wraps that I made. And my dog was rising up on the platform next to me.
Uh-oh.
And when he got about head height, I said, Angela. And she said, oh, sorry. And she hit the button to lower the dog. And she says, oh, and your necklace. So I started telling her about my jewelry. My dog is down on the floor again. I said, Angela, we're not going to get this picture done if you don't get him at the right height. She says, oh, sorry. So she pushes the button and she asks about my skirt and my dress. And my dog goes up shoulder height and goes, Angela, And she said, "Oh, sorry." So I shut up and she brings him down to waist height. Meantime, my dog is beginning to get really scared as this platform goes up and down and up and down. But he's doing a perfect stay because that's, he's a German shepherd and German shepherds have to do everything perfectly or they're not happy. So he's now at the right height. I put my arm around him and I smile at her and say, "Quickly take the picture." And she does. So he's looking straight at her, very focused, because he's terrified that she's going to push that button and make him
Like an
move again.
elevator.
Yeah. And so he's not looking anywhere else. He's not messing around like the dogs often do when they're trying to get the photograph because he just is saying, "Oh, I'm being hugged by my person and it's okay. But I'm not moving."
Oh, that's so funny.
So
Yeah, that's
that
so
was my
funny.
book cover. And the book's title is 50 Years of Walking with Friends.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I mean, there's so much in it, so much depth. I love all the stories. I'm on my ninth guide dog, and you're on your 10th. And my first was a shepherd, and my third was a shepherd lab. You had a shepherd lab.
Yes, I
And that
did.
one sang, right? That
She
one sang, right?
sang.
Mine
She
sang too.
and she was a beautiful lab-looking dog.
Yep, mine was too.
But she had a quirky ear that would stand up when she was excited. So we
Oh,
had this lab-shaped
how
ear that would
funny.
stand up straight. It was her right ear that would pop up when she was very excited.
Oh, that's
And
adorable.
I could not have made it through university without her because I grew up in a very tight-knit family, that were just, they were just always there for me, but never in a way that made me feel that I was less. I
They
was.
didn't ever, they weren't, yeah, they didn't make you feel less. That's interesting. That's really good.
My little brothers and little sister looked up to me because I was the Winona, the firstborn daughter. And when mama wasn't there, I was in charge. And
Okay. So
so.
blindness didn't get in the way of that. Nobody said, well, you can't. And your family, it sounds like they treated you like they knew you could with lots of things.
Yes, they did. And one story about that is that my mother gave us each a dollar because there was a carnival within walking distance of where we were living in a trailer park. And she said, "Okay, now you can stay at the carnival until your tickets run out and then come home and tell me because I've got a lot to do, so I can't go with you. So your sister's in charge." So we took off to go to this carnival. And the way we traveled is I had a brother on each side of me and a brother behind me. And so, or sometimes he was in front of me. And we set off for the carnival.
So there were
And
four of you in all,
yes, at
you
that
and
time,
three.
my baby sister didn't arrive until I was 17. So we set off for the carnival. And of course, the carnies notice everything because they have to pay attention. It's part of the way they lived, the way we lived as Native Americans. And so they quickly picked up on the fact that I was walking with my hand on the brother to my left and that the brother in front, they were kind of protecting me without making me feel protected because we were walking in a wedge through the crowd. And so they realized that I couldn't see and they refused to take my tickets. So we rode until my brother's 10 tickets were gone because at that time they were 10 cents a piece to ride on the carnival. And then my brothers were sad because they thought we'd have to go home. And I said, no, I still have my tickets. So I divided them up among my brothers, and I let the little one ride on a merry-go-round or something by himself, because that wasn't something we were interested in. And then we all went on five more rides.
Well, I'm
So,
glad they didn't say you couldn't ride. They just didn't want to take your tickets.
yeah. So
Okay.
then we walked home, and my mother said, when we came in, did you have fun? And my little brother said, yeah, but I don't get it. Why is everybody so nice to her just because she's a girl?
Oh boy.
So that's my rabbit hole about
I like
about
that.
being in a family that totally accepts you as who you are. For my family, I was Shanigamukwe, which means a day so bright and beautiful that everything is perfect. You can go fishing on the Great Lakes in a birch bark canoe because everything is as it should be. And that was the name my great grandmother gave me. And it gave me the confidence to know who I was to my family. I was perfect as I was. I was not broken. I was as
Beautiful.
the Great Spirit had meant me to be.
Oh, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. And so you grew up with that sense of who you were, who you are. And when did you begin to feel that there was something different about being in the world?
When I went to school,
Yeah.
because there they saw this darling, sweet little girl. They didn't know I was a fierce warrior. They didn't know that I could not stand for babies or animals or old people or people that needed protection to have a warrior to speak for them and fight for them. And among my people, I was very brave. Going out into the world where all they saw was this little blind girl, I knew I wasn't just a helpless child. I knew I was strong and I was brave. But out there, they made me shy and afraid.
Isn't that sad? See, isn't that sad? That's some of what I kept thinking about as I was reading. I kept thinking, okay, so I've usually been a person that's been like, well, of course I'm going to be determined. And of course, like with this podcast, every moment is a moment of new possibility, and that's great. And, but I don't stop often and say, but what about that world that has those messages for us, and what is it like? I guess I don't think enough about what is it really like to feel oh, shy and or I don't even want to say broken, but affected by the world that projects a lot onto us, that doesn't believe in us, that doesn't see us as capable. And I think that maybe we deserve to give ourselves some really good attention for those, and to know that we are worthy of love and kindness from others who can understand us and just appreciate who we are.
Well, that puts a burden on us in a way that it makes us have to stand up and demonstrate who we are constantly.
Yes,
And
that's
that can
true.
be exhausting.
It can. It can. And what about, like, I've heard Dr. Phil talk about, what about having a soft place to fall, a place where It's
Oh, do you
okay.
know Sarah? I'm blanking on her name. I hate being 75. My brain is deteriorating rapidly. Let's see. Sarah starts with a P. She sang with oh, now I can't even think of his name. John, he died this last year. I think.
Oh.
He's a wonderful writer of songs. And anyway,
Sarah.
she has a song called A Safe Place to Land.
That is so important.
And
And
that's
I've
one of
often
the things about, being part of the ACB community is I can be brave for them, but and it's not a strain. But strangers walking into a room with a bunch of people you don't know and knowing all that they see is your blindness
Oh, I
is
know.
terrifying.
Yes, and it's lonely.
It
It's
is.
very lonely. I was always sort of raised to, you just like keep a stiff upper lip and you
Well, you
just
never
yeah.
ever show fear
No.
because the kind of person that gets a sense of power through intimidation, if
Yeah.
they see you as a victim, they target you. And you never want to make yourself look like a target. So it's kind of like being a kitty cat where you puff up and try to look bigger than you are or braver than you are. And it's also like being a turtle where you put on your armor, which to me is often what I wear, because that's
Yeah.
my armor. If I'm attractively dressed and I'm projecting who I am by wearing native regalia or a piece of jewelry my brother or my uncle made for me, I feel like I've got my turtle shell on. But a turtle knows that she's not going to get anywhere if she doesn't stick her neck out. So there you go. You're all set. I'm all armored up. I'm ready to face them. And then I also find that my gift of running down rabbit holes is useful because my crazy brain will pop up with something like the time I went to an Elks Lodge meeting because my husband was joining in order to spend time with his grandfather. And so the wives were invited, and we were supposed to go sit in another room while they got their antlers or whatever they do at Elk Lodge meetings. And so there I am, abandoned by my husband, and I'm between dogs, so I have a white cane, which isn't my it's a wonderful tool, and I'm good at it, but it gives me no comfort at all when I'm lost.
Oh, yeah.
And
Yeah. You can't just sort of say,
okay,
outside or.
door, find a door, or find the elevator, or so I'm good with my cane, but I also hate walking in a crowd with it. You have to change the way you handle it. You have to do the instead of having it out in front of you, you have it upright and you're clearing just a small space where you can step. And so I've got my cane in my hand, and one of the women sees me stand up with my cane and she says, could I help you in some way? And I said, yes, but I could tell from her voice she was apprehensive. So I said, the easiest way to do this is let me touch your elbow. I'll use my cane in my other hand to make sure where that, that you're not going to accidentally walk me into a table or whatever. And when you go up or downstairs, and if you trip and fall, I can let go. So I made a joke and made her laugh and put her at ease. And so that's what I try to do is I think about the other people that are there who probably are terrified of me.
Well, and it's sad that many people really are terrified of
Yeah,
blindness and blind people.
they sometimes act like they think it's catching.
Exactly. Like, yeah, they're going to get sick. And so in a way, I mean, there really is a lot that's projected onto us of other people's fear, other people's doubts. And, you know, I'm sure, I mean, I can think of countless of examples of having to say, wait a minute, no, that's not what it is for me. No, that's not how it is. But some people really, no matter what, just don't loosen up on that. It's very hard.
But the ones that do relax,
Yes.
they are already on their way to being your friend.
Exactly. Yep.
And the ones that never understand, humor at least gets you through it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, where would we be without humor? Oh, my gosh. Where would we be without play and playfulness? Oh, and even the fact that you wrote this other book, the child, you know, children's book that I want to get to just a little here as well. How many children do you have?
I gave birth to two beautiful daughters who are not visually impaired. That's
Right.
usually one
Yeah,
of
I
the
know.
first things
It's
people
usually
ask
one of the,
is,
and is your husband? No.
no. And oh, that leads to its own problems because you're walking around with this man who loves to hold your hand or have you hold his arm, or in these days, now that he's in a wheelchair, push his wheelchair. Because he trusts me, I can't steer it. So he gets to do that. But he knows I'm going to understand that at the top of ramps, he wants me to brake and hold back because he's afraid the chair will run away and, go into the parking lot and out of the street, and that I will do the ballet correctly to get him through doors. Of holding it with my right foot jammed against it, and then my shoulder and my arm, and of course we have the added interest factor of having a guide dog
A
on my
guide dog
left
on your left.
on leash because I've had to drop it his handle in order to push the wheelchair, and so we do this doggy wheelchair ballet as we go through doors,
Love it.
and so. We've been married 52 years,
It's
and
beautiful. Oh.
for the last 7, he has been fighting a neurologic condition which mimics Parkinson's. So, but because we've always been a team, and because he knows I am a competent person, and is always,
Exactly.
that was one of the things that when we met, drew me to him, because the men that were attracted to me were attracted by the outside package and never bothered to find out what was inside.
Well, and they wanted you, there was one that just, you know, wanted you to basically stay at home, didn't want you to go to work or something, you know?
Yeah, no, he didn't. He wanted me to be a little china doll under a glass dome sitting on a shelf. And he would protect me from the dust and everything else,
Oh, gosh.
yeah, I was sitting
Just can't
at the,
picture that.
yeah, I was sitting at the table and he was, I was telling him something and I was not getting a response from him. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, I'm just looking at your little feet. They're so beautiful." And I'm going, "Oh my God, they are for walking on. They are not for admiration." And I said, "You have no clue who I am."
Your little feet. Oh my gosh.
I actually was engaged to him for several months, and I broke it off because I just couldn't deal with the fact that he didn't want me to go to college.
That's right.
So,
Oh my
what else could
God.
you do with this, with a man like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he must have been just really shocked when you broke it off.
Oh, he was extremely upset, and that was very hard.
What are you doing making your own decisions?
Yeah. And so I married the man who was he was dyslexic and very shy, and got into college because the college we were attending was only 10 years old, and they were letting in a certain percentage of students they thought would fail in order to get their stats up, to show that they were, a competitive college. And so, and he found that out because his counselor at school told him he should go to a trade school, but he has a high IQ. So, so he was very nervous, very shy. And he went to the freshman get acquainted dance with another girl who was a very pushy girl who invited him to go with her. And I had gone outside because the music was too loud, and I was sitting on a rock with my guide dog back at the room, because I knew by that time that she was a bit noisy around loud music. I'm sitting there on the rock, and with my white king going, now how do I get back to my room, from here? Because I'm not sure I re was paying attention when I walked over with Andy and Kathy, who were immediately partnered and disappeared into the crowd. And so I'd worked my way outside, and I'm sitting there going, this is the pits. And the girl from my dorm walked up to me and said, hi, you remember me? I'm down the hall from you. And I said, oh, hi. And she said, and this is Curtis Noriega. And so I said hi to him, and I made a few silly jokes to put him at his ease because I picked up his tension. And then somebody came running and said, your dog is howling. And I excused myself and I said, okay, let me touch your shoulder so we can run. And I went back to rescue my dog, who did not want me to be at the dance
No.
without her.
Oh, that is so funny. Oh,
And
gosh.
so then at the end of the camp, he came in and slid into the row on the bus, and said, do you remember me? And I said, oh yes, you're Curtis, hi. And so he asked me to go to walk from the dormitory to go get a hamburger because he didn't have a car. And so I was the first girl in my little coterie that I had made friends with over the first, moving into the dorm day, and that had a date, and everybody came to my room and helped me get dressed, picking out what I should wear and all of that. So, it's just, if you put yourself out there and let people know who you are, what your interests are, and that you're somebody other than a condition, as hard as it is, it makes the world a little bit easier place to navigate with if you can tell people who you are. And sometimes, no matter what you do, they aren't going to get it.
Oh,
And
I know.
for those people, you just push them to the outer edge of your circle.
That's true. That's
And
true.
you enjoy the people that are in your inner circle.
And I mean, even when you talk about the rude questions people ask, I've tried to teach about that in the sensitivity training that I've done over the years. But the ones that have objected to that the most have been some of the people working in special ed. No, you should answer all questions.
Or religious people, because
You're supposed to be grateful
you're
and
supposed to be and you're supposed to be open for being a miracle,
What do you mean
being
you don't want
prayed
healing?
over. Yeah. Oh, one man even told me I ought to be ashamed of myself for
For.
not wanting to seek healing. And I said, well, honestly, I don't think God makes mistakes. And if he chose for me to be blind, then it's he has a road for me and a purpose for me that requires that blindness. So just because I couldn't be the veterinarian ballerina that I wanted to be when I was six, and because I lost my vision when I was eight, God didn't need a veterinarian who was also a ballerina. He had a different road for me to walk.
Right, and I like
And
the little
so my purpose is to listen for his messages and follow where his the path he wants me to follow.
That's right. Well, the little prince says what is essential isn't visible to the eye. So I think there's a lot more to inner vision than the physical vision that people think we're missing so much.
And not to pull back inside of our turtle shells and hide from the world, but stick that little neck out there and go, okay, I'm ready. I've got my armor and I've got my guide dog and I can do it.
So it's amazing your life. I mean, because you said you raised, you said two kids.
And
You
I
raised.
adopted a blind child when I was serving in the Peace Corps.
Oh, that is so cool. And yeah, and your life in the Peace Corps, and did Kurt go with you into that? Was
Yes.
that, yeah.
He was working as a junior high school science teacher, and I had a temporary job as a caseworker. We were living in San Jose with a cat and my guide dog. And we were buying a home, and when my temporary position disappeared from under my feet, they hired me on other people's codes because our lovely President Reagan was then governor of California, and he had frozen all social service positions.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And yeah, and also he almost kept us from graduating from college because he closed down all the campuses because of the anti-war things that were going on campuses.
Oh
And
yeah.
so my husband had a vital project that he was doing an agricultural project on a particular pest and developing methods for natural control without pesticides. And so he had to sneak onto campus to feed his bugs. So anyway, there I am, working on temporary codes, and so they hired me because I walked into the office to ask if they had any openings for entry-level social workers, and the gal said, "No, we're on a hiring freeze." Or no, she said, "No, we don't have any." And I said, "Oh, so you've got your token Indian." And I turned around to leave, and she said, "Wait a minute." So she helped me fill out the form because they had a unit that was struggling because they only had one full-time social worker and he had two aides and they needed another qualified social worker. And because I had my VA and they only had junior college degrees, the Sioux and the Lumbee couldn't do some of the things that a full-fledged social work would do. And so I ended up with a caseload of 100 in a
Wow.
time when we didn't have access to talking computers. And everything had to be done on a form in red ink and then turned in for the unit clerk to enter them into the database on the inaccessible computer.
Oh my
So
gosh.
yeah, it was
But they didn't say you couldn't do it because you couldn't see. They
no,
needed that token
because that
Indian.
token Indian, because the unit handled only relocated Native Americans and Eskimos, because at that time it was a government policy to force people off the reservation, pay them to go to cities, promising them jobs and assistance. So they were dumping, like one of my clients, a lovely little Sioux gal with five children in a tiny apartment in San Jose. And she was pregnant and she knew where she needed to go for her prenatal care, but it was 10 miles from where she lived, because San Jose is a big city. And she walked because she didn't know about taking buses and she didn't know about volunteer drivers who would take people to medical appointments.
Right.
And she didn't have the contacts for even the Indian Center in town. And I found this out when I knocked on her door and I had sent her a letter, because I couldn't even hire a reader. So I had to ask one of my co-workers to read me the information in the file. I'd braille out notes, put it in the file with the print stuff that I couldn't access.
Yep.
And so I knew that she didn't have a telephone. So I knock on this door and this lovely young woman opens it, and I introduce myself. I'm standing there with my guide dog. She doesn't think it's abnormal for a person to show up with a guide dog. She just accepts that that's what her caseworker does. And so she's standing there and she says, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were coming today." And I said, "I sent you a letter last week because I know you don't have a phone." And she says, "Oh, I saw it was from the government and I was having a downer day, so I didn't open it." And this is why they needed me.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Because I didn't scare her.
No. Right.
Me with my long braids and my long skirts and my moccasins and my guide dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you, yeah, I'm can imagine you as a
well,
social worker.
I wasn't just afraid to hug.
No.
And I wasn't afraid to say, "I see you. I know your pain.
Yeah.
I know you're afraid."
Right.
I've been afraid many times.
Yeah.
And remember who you are. Stand tall.
Yes. Yes.
Remember that
who you are.
You are a stranger to these people around you. They don't get you. But you mustn't let your family and your people down. So you be the best you can be.
And that's you. That is you in the world. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, so you raised your kids, adopted this child, then your kids have had their kids. So here you are, a great grandmother.
A great grandmother, yes.
And you're still, that's your message. That's your message. And that's been your mission. And you're helping, you know, doing that with your husband. You're just, I mean, you were still telling your mom that.
Yes.
Yeah.
When she lost her vision.
Oh my.
Or started to lose it before to macular degeneration.
Mine did too. My mom's did too. Yeah. And then people would say, "Is it genetic?" I'm like, no.
No, I don't have macular degeneration. In fact, my daughter said when I had to have my last eye enucleated, she said, "Hey, Mom, maybe you can get medical insurance now. You don't have a pre-existing condition. You're no longer you no longer have glaucoma."
That's right. That's right. I don't have an eye problem.
Don't have any eyes to have a problem
with.
That's
right. That's right.
And I have beautiful big brown eyes. They may not actually do me a whole lot of good, but they do good for you.
That's right.
They're not, they don't look strange. And
people have said, "Oh, I can see that you just look right through me. You look right through people. And I can tell by your eyes, you know, you're so authentic." And I'm like, "Oh, thank you. They're plastic."
Yep. I wrote a poem about, that I have wings, but I don't, but I don't have windows. You know, I'm not like a building. You know, I don't have windows to look out of. Can you look
Right.
in? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and who's more blind? I mean, a lot of times it's the people who just don't see in, don't look in and think that, you know, but that's just where they are. That's just where some people are. But oh my gosh. So now tell us about this most recent book.
Its title is Dogwood Blossom, Growing Up Native American, and it's a series of stories about a single mom and her three children on the Isabella Reservation where my mother was born.
And we're going to hear a little excerpt of you reading it near the end, a very sweet story.
Because whenever my father was stationed somewhere that families could not go, like when he was sent off to the Korean War, or the Korean police action.
Yeah.
Whoops, I just dropped my lap desk because I stood up to
Oops.
slam the door because my husband and our home health aide just came back from
Oh,
grocery
okay.
shopping, and I
Aw,
didn't want the
I didn't
racket
hear it. No, it didn't
to.
make a racket.
Okay, so anyway, I wrote it because it was stories of my childhood. And again, I was dedicating it to my mother and my two younger brothers that are included in the story, because the three oldest of us are about 2 years apart in age.
Okay.
Then we got a 9-year-old brother when we were in high school, when one of my mother's sisters was not able to take care of her children, and they got split up, and we took the oldest, who was
Okay.
nine.
Wow.
And then when I was 17, and I had gone off to get a new guide dog, when I came home, I had a new 2-year-old baby sister who was another sister's child, a stepsister's child.
Okay.
And she got pregnant at 17. And when the baby was 2 weeks old, she ran away from home because she couldn't deal with raising a child. She was still a child. And my grandmother had her for 2 years,
Okay.
but my grandmother was. She had arthritis and she had cancer, and she was going through radiation and chemo and all of that, and was too weak to care for a 2-year-old.
What's
So
amazing to me is, you know, there's a man whose work I have liked for many years. His name is Morris Massey, and he says that we form our values by whatever decade we're in when we're age 10. And that the way we change them is through enough significant emotional experiences. And I think that the key word is enough, because for some people it's one, and for some people it's many. But when I listen to you and read your books, I see there's just constant diversity in your life from the beginning, and your differences are accepted by your family. And but they also trusted that you would accept all the differences of the many other facets of family all around you. And so it's not surprising that there are all these stories that you could tell and bring out in this, even in this next book, but that, you know, you've got all these different children and how all of this, and then all the dogs in your life. And it's just amazing. It's just amazing the many, many facets of diversity in your own life.
well, you know, I'm already working on my next book, but
Good.
it's got a working title, but it's not nearly ready. And I have a lovely niece who is the mother of five children. And she was, she had two when she had cancer and was going through chemotherapy and very frightened. She's a lovely, lovely girl, woman. She got pregnant and they wanted to abort the baby and treat the cancer. And she refused because she said, no, God wouldn't have given me this baby if I weren't meant to have it. And
Excellent.
it's a weird thing about cervical cancer that sometimes it will go into remission or even clear up if the mother is pregnant.
Oh, wow.
So,
Fascinating.
she had a perfectly healthy baby girl, and then she had two more kids. So,
Oh, gosh.
you know, the she so sometimes we just have to deal with what is and do our best. And other times, you know, I'm not anti abortion, but I think that has to be the decision of the mother. And the mother is the one whose body's going to go through all these
That's right.
bizarre changes and have to deal with being a mother for the rest of her life. Because even when they're out on their own and all grown up, especially now, we are in the boomerang period where we launch our children into the world, and because of the economy, because of the housing shortage, because of COVID, our children come home again and they need us to be there and to be strong. So, and it's also a time when we have to be there for each other, the people that don't have family. The and you know that's you know something that I've tried to teach my children is look beyond the surface, see who's in there, and help them if you can.
Beautiful. Well, you just keep doing that. You just keep doing that in such a wonderful way. And so, I mean, I think you model that for your kids. And
It's my mother did
I know,
for
I
me.
hear that, your mother. And do you talk to your mother, even though she's moved on? Do you talk to her?
I have something that my sister-in-law sent me. It's a little amethyst carving that's a turtle because my mother loved turtles. And she collected them. She must have had a couple of hundred of them, and
Oh
we
my
gave
gosh.
them away as some of them away as gifts at her funeral.
Yeah, I did that with something else with my mother. Yeah,
Of
beautiful.
things that were meaningful to her that my stepfather didn't need to have to dust. So it was a gift to them both in a way. To get mama's turtles into other people's hands. But my sister-in-law sent me this one. She was not at the funeral. And she didn't know about the turtle giveaway, but she sent me one that is an amethyst, a carved amethyst. And it's a beautiful little turtle. And when I need to talk to my mother, I can pick it up and hold it like a worry stone. And remember the lessons of turtle because turtle the con the northern well the whole thing of this connected piece of land from Canada down to the tip of South America is called Turtle Island among the people. And the story, the legend of how it came to be Turtle Island is part of our creation story or explanation. So my next book is explanation stories or teaching stories that I have written over the years. And so my working title is Grandmother Spider Stories, because if you remember the Ojibwe Dreamcatcher,
Oh, yes, I used to make them a lot.
that has spread all over, and all tribes have adopted it, but it started among the Ojibwe people, my mother's people. And it was a man who was ill, who had a dream about his daughter and her friends wearing a particular costume and bringing him healing by dancing. So that's the story of, the origin of Jingle Dancers. But anyway, the dream catcher was an emblem that was hung over openings to keep anything evil from getting inside.
Oh, okay, right.
And it was often held, one was often hung on a cradle board or someplace around babies to keep them safe. So that's why I have my main character being Grandmother Spider, and she's somewhere spinning her webs. And she sees someone who has a problem, a child, an animal, whatever. And she tells them stories to teach them how to handle whatever the problem is.
Okay. Wow. Full of
So
wisdom.
I'm going to send what I've got so far to my niece in Colorado, the one that's the mother of five kids that, battled cancer and still does from time to time. I'm going to send them to her because she's a lovely artist. And because it's a children's story book, again, I want really nice pictures to go with it to illustrate it.
Beautiful. Oh my gosh.
So that's my next project that I'm working on.
Absolutely
And
beautiful.
after that, I'm working on a book about attending public school called Swimming Up the Mainstream is the working title on that one.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh gosh, so
And then
important.
I'll probably put together a collection of short stories for adults. I'll go back to, things that aren't child related, but I'm not ready yet for, well, this should keep me busy till I'm 80.
You bet. Oh my gosh, yes.
So
Well,
then maybe I can retire. I won't make a lot of money because being self-published and not picked up by a, major press or whatever. I have to pay for all the groundwork, so I don't know. This last one, I went again with DLD Books because I had my arbitrary timeline of getting it done. Before my birthday, which is in September, so be ready for the Christmas market. And also because on my birthday, I usually call my mother and sing happy birthday. And so I was going to put another book in her hands, now that she had turned 92. Unfortunately, she passed in July.
Gosh.
So, with all of that ramification to deal with, family issues, Kurt's health, just stuff. It didn't get published until October, toward the end of October. And that's why it we did the book launch on the 6th of December, because I couldn't even get that much done before. I got it
You
published, but I
stay
really
busy.
couldn't do much with it. So you're only my second public
Okay. Well, I am
presentation.
honored. I am honored. And, I'm like, gosh, people think that some people think all blind people know each other, and like, do you know my, and sometimes I've said, well, do you know my third cousin who lives in Africa, who's also, twice removed, who's also blind or something, like, of course we don't all know each other. And sometimes when people have said that, I've said, well, let's see, do all fat people know each other? I don't think so. And I've had people really kind of laugh at that. But, we don't. And yet when I read your books and connecting with you today, I'm thinking, oh, I wish we had always known each other, but I am
I
very
don't
happy that we
think
do.
we've ever met in person, but we
No.
might have,
We might have.
that's the sort of thing. I mean, we might have been on an elevator
We
together or
might have.
something
We might have, but I am
because
really
of,
happy.
the things that the community has brought us, is a
Yeah.
closer connection with people that we may have been friends on Facebook. We may have
Right.
met them for a meal at a convention when
We
the
might have.
restaurant was crowded. You never
Yes.
know.
But I remember your booth, and I still have that wonderful bag that's a horse's blanket. I wish I had gotten even more that you had there. And I remember looking for you after that, thinking, oh, wouldn't that be nice? But I'm just so happy to be connected with you now. I am thrilled that we've spent this time together, and I think it will be very interesting to people. Is there anything else that you, I mean, we could talk for hours, but is there anything else that you specifically want to add?
No, just one of those old cliche things that comes up to mind is be you. Everybody else has been taken.
Be you. Everyone else has been taken. That's right. I love that. And I love, don't let anybody walk around in your head with their dirty feet.
No,
Like that.
that's a good one too, because honestly, if we let ourselves be defined by them, we will never make our place in the world.
That's right.
And we each have to carve it out ourselves because nobody else is going to do it for us.
No, but it sure is good to have close people, safe people, along the way, people who get us. It's so important and so good to know. Oh my gosh, you have my deep respect and appreciation.
As that's the thing that employers don't get about us. Is we are creative people. We think
Yes.
outside the box all the time
That's
because if we
right.
didn't, we'd never get anywhere. You
Oh.
know, it's sad though when you see someone that has not been allowed to reach their full potential or have additional disabilities, and nobody takes the time to be there for them. But that's the one of the things I love about ACB. We do take the time to be there
Yeah.
for each other. And whether you have learning disabilities or mobility challenges that other people don't have, it's all good because you are you. And if something I know how to do is something I can teach you, and if you can't learn it, then it's not your thing. So don't worry
Right,
about it
right, right.
because you've got things that are your thing.
Well, and to just make that difference to each other so that we, to me, family is everywhere. Family, my friends are family.
I'm
And
sure.
so
I think there's
that
a
sense.
quote somewhere about friends are family that you choose for yourself.
That's right.
The
Yeah.
other, you've got some in your family you probably wish weren't there. Everybody has one or two, but
Yep.
even them, because they're family, you do what you can.
That's right. Yeah.
You
Well.
don't let them, abuse their connection.
No.
You protect yourself when you have to, but you also don't completely shut the door. You just may push it almost closed,
Right.
just
And it may
so
be that
their
they'll suck.
toxicity doesn't take over too much
Right.
of your time or space, but you still will give them a hug if you see them.
Well, and
And
they
hide your
might,
wallet.
yeah, and hide your wallet. And they may, I mean, our hearts can open at any point in time. My 60s were my best decade. I'm in my 70s now as well, and it's my best. I mean, I
Do you
just
get
have,
that you don't sound 70?
oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, you don't sound blind either. You've gotten that, I'm sure.
Yep. But
Yeah.
most people will take my energy and silliness and assume I'm much younger.
Oh yeah.
And
Oh yeah.
I just say, hey, isn't it great that all my friends are blind too? Because they don't see the silver in my hair. They just want to know what I'm wearing in it today. Well, to take adversity with grace and to look for the small, beautiful treasures in each day, those are the key to getting older gracefully.
Yeah, sure. I think that's right. Yeah. So before we go, I know you have a special piece from Dogwood Blossom to share with us. And so I think we'll do that as we wrap up. Thank you so much. This is great. Yeah.
So this is chapter 4, An Unexpected Gift. Lisa Swan snuggled into the beautiful capote her mother had made for her Christmas gift. She looked out of the bedroom window onto a white world of snow-laden cedar trees and brilliant sun-dazzled drifts. She watched as Dan Trabue stepped out of his back door and waded out into the deep, pristine snow of his yard. He held something small cupped in his hands. He bent and placed it in a drift against the fence between his garden and the side yard of her home. Lisa drew in a gasp of surprise. She spun around, raced down the hall, burst out the kitchen door, and ran around to the side of the house. She reached to the fence to lift a small black and white ball of downy fur from where it shivered in the snowbank. A tiny spotted beagle pup trembled in her hands and gave out a faint whimper. She tucked him inside her new coat. The puppy snuggled into the warmth of her body. He was comforted by the beat of her heart, and his shivers diminished. Elijah Fisher crossed the road from his house to that of his eldest daughter. He spotted his granddaughter, Lisa, crouched in the snow beside the house. "What are you doing out in the cold, Blossom?" he called. "Officer Cherbu just threw away a puppy in the snow. Do you think Mama will let me keep it?" "Let's go inside and see what you have there, little one," Elijah responded. Lisa and her grandfather turned to retrace the path to enter the warmth of the kitchen, where Mary Swan stood pouring a cup of coffee. And I think I'll end there.
Oh, I love that. And I love that at first, it was like, oh, I don't know. And but then it ended up just working out in such a wonderful way. So sweet.
So anyway, that is what I
Beautiful.
chose to share with you today.
Thank you.